So wherever your data is coming in, it's very flexible. And then the output, again, should just be, analytics that can help you build audiences, target those audiences, and then deliver them across whatever activation platform you're using at the moment. Welcome to the State of CRM podcast. I'm Matt.
I'm Ben.
And today we're going to talk a little bit about the disconnect between data structures and email service providers. So the reason that we're discussing this is there's a recent study that actually came out from Simon Data and ClickSee that has some interesting insights that highlight some of these disconnects. And we've been conducting our own research study actually called the State of CRM, which isn't focused entirely on the same thing, but covers a lot of the same areas. And a lot of what we've been finding preliminarily actually backs up some of these results that were released in the study, and we found it really interesting. So it got our wheels turning a little bit, and something we wanted to cover today.
Yeah, and just before getting into the topic, Matt, just a reminder, that's really crazy. We are on the episode 30 today. That's been 9 months. We are recording this podcast every single week. So for the audience, you marketers that are listening to us for the first time or just joining us, welcome to the show, and don't hesitate to look back in what we published this year. I mean, that's what we started like during spring, and there is a lot of topics, different approaches that we shared and topic we discussed. So, I mean, we are happy to have you, and I'm sure you'd find content and inspiration in all this content. But let's jump back to the topic. So data,
everybody's favorite topic. So, one of the big statistics that the study leads with is actually that just under half of those they surveyed say that their ESP either doesn't use all of their data or they don't know if it does, which I think highlights a couple of interesting things. First of all, I mean, we've talked a lot about this throughout the different episodes that we've done in the past, and that's the fact that marketers, the majority of them, if not all CRM marketers, have access to first-party data. Their company is likely collecting more data than they're even aware about. And so this wealth of data is something that actually, as we know, can power activation, it can power personalization, individualization, all of the methods that marketers want to employ to get the results that they want. But there is this sort of disconnect between where the data is sitting and the ability for the ESP to ingest and activate that. And I think one thing the study goes into a little bit is that it also depends on your ESP. Some of them are very sophisticated in this way. Others are more limited. But either way, that's a significant number of marketers that are actually saying that their ESPs are not fully data-driven or they're not aware. And I think the not aware piece is also interesting because, not to scold you, but if you're a CRM marketer, you should be aware of the data that you're using and what's being fed into your platform for activation. And we're going to talk a little bit about, how you can become more aware. It's pretty straightforward, but it's something you definitely want to think about. One, because you want to make sure you're using the data in the best possible way. But two, you want to make sure that your ESP is actually able to deliver on the segmentation and personalization expectations that you have on it.
Yeah. One of the big disconnects that relates to CRM between how the data is used and the ESP is a segmentation. I mean, segmentation, the issue with this disconnect between the way segmentation is done and the data available, or we don't know if that's available or used, is the fact, first, most of the segmentation are based on the tool are using historical data, and that means it's not fresh data, not even talking about real-time data points and knowledge. Can imagine, and I'm sure that there are marketers that will relate to that example, that working in a company, paying an agency or using or asking our data science team or the IT to build a segmentation, to build segments at the period of the year, and using this segmentation for months and quarters and years. I discussed and saw clients or companies using segment that were built 3 years prior to the discussion, and just admitting that there are no clue anymore why it was built this way, is it still relevant, all of that. I mean, and this disconnect between data accessibility to the data and the use of it to build the segments is really, there is a big gap, and for a lot of companies, and to not say almost all companies.
Yeah, and I think like what that leads to, and the studies sort of like concluded this as well, is, you know, what's interesting is we hear over and over again, which we've mentioned, that marketers are looking to create personalized, relevant experiences for each individual. But because of the issues that you've been describing, Ben, what's been resulting is that most marketers actually use less than 10 segments.
Yeah, a few segments.
And only one or two elements of personalization in each communication, which is likely something very minor, like potentially like name insertion or something like that, which is good. But as you know, if you've listened to some of our content on personalization versus individualization, that really isn't going the whole way. So that use of historical data and limitations within the data sets that marketers have access to is actually impacting their ability to deliver personalization. One or two segments is not personalization. If you only have one or two data points that you're segmenting on, you're basically segmenting on nothing, because you there's infinite data points on each individual person.
Yeah, and even, I mean, you're talking about the lowest part of it can be done with two, three segments. But I mean, even talking about 10 segments, I mean, if you have 10 segments that just based on 5, 6, 10, 20 attributes, different attributes to split in 10, your database in 10 segments, I mean, you're still not very far from a batch and blast or to mass communication. That's not adapted to the individual that are in the database or in this segment, in this group, in this cohort. I mean, as you said, that there are a ton of data points. For each consumer, every consumer is different. There are a lot of things, and to learn from them and from the relationship you've built with the consumer. And yet we are still seeing that only 2, 3, 4 elements are personalized, and most of them are first name, last name, and date of the last purchase. Yeah. I mean, come on, okay, that's the basics, but that's not really the thing that we can do or accessible today in terms of individualization and personalization of the experience.
Yeah.
Because personalization can be a topic itself. We see a lot of same thing on personalization. I mean, same practices when we talk about personalization, but there are a lot of ways to do personalization. For sure, starting with the first name in the email is one, but there is a lot more to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame considering, again, like all of the data that marketers have or potentially have access to, you know, customer data, transaction data, digital data. It's all loyalty program data. I mean, this is all stuff that a lot of companies are collecting and just simply not using very well. So, you know, just thinking about like what are some of the things that marketers can do today to start thinking about like to start tackling this gap or this issue. And I think, you know, one thing to think about, and this is not something you need technology to deliver or you need to purchase a platform. It's simply building relationships in your organization. And something that we've discovered, because we work with a lot of different IT people as well as marketers, is that in a lot of organizations, those teams are not connected together, or they're not even in some cases really speaking to each other. So you have the data science analytics IT team collecting the data, storing it somewhere, theoretically, and hopefully in some cases making use of it so that the business as a whole, including the marketing team, can make decisions and build strategy, et cetera. And then you have the marketing team that's trying to execute on the KPIs it's looking to deliver for the business. And what we find are, from KPI alignment to just simply being aware of what the teams are working on, that doesn't exist. So if you're kind of listening to this and thinking about, okay, well, I really don't know what first party data we're using. I don't even know what we're collecting or where it sits or what we have access to. You know, a good first place to start is just to start reaching out to some of those folks across the hall on the IT team and just saying, hey, like, let's sit down and talk about this. I want to understand a little bit more, like, from a data perspective, like what you're doing, what you're collecting. And if that is the case that it is being fed into marketing activation platforms, how is that working? What data is being used? And then what are the platforms actually able to do with that to deliver those segmentation and personalization capabilities that you're looking to achieve? So I think one thing you can do immediately today is start building that relationship and understanding really what's coming from the IT team. And I think like that then will also create empathy for your team from IT when you're looking to get resources to help vet partners or get data science resources, et cetera.
Yeah, and when you do that, there's a lot of benefits. I know, but I know by experience that it can be scary. I mean, yes, you mentioned, Matt, that this teams, marketing and IT, are not talking to each other a lot, but sometimes they don't speak the same languages.
Yeah.
So that's some barrier to break, to pass. But it's worth it. It's worth it understanding what's happening in the data, how it's organized, how it can be leveraged, what data you are actually sitting on and that's not at all used, and that can be really helpful to envision to deploy to deliver a better experience for your consumer. But it starts with a discussion with the IT or data science team.
Yeah, you gotta take them to lunch or buy them a virtual coffee or drink or something and pick their brain a bit. But yeah, that gap exists, and if it exists in your organization, you're not alone. But it's something that that you can start working on fixing today without spending a dollar or having to vet any partners at all.
Yeah, and I mean, if we keep going on the topic, one of the challenges, it is also to get the data in order. I mean, to organize it, to be sure that, oh, we have something that we can actually activate. And there are a lot of true and false information out there. I mean, that's related also to our episode from last week on the best practice that are published everywhere. But and the part on the CDP, we are mentioning that, yeah, there are pros and cons with CDPs, but what we see is that a big wave of CDP on the market. Everyone wants a CDP to get the customer information centralized, organized, to be able to activate that. You still, now that it's, if it's in the CDP, that's perfect, nice, but you still need to find a way to activate your data. And the thing is, you don't necessarily need to have all of that in a CDP or organized to start to take action, to re-action the data, or to take improvement, to bring improvement in your strategy. And there are other ways. I mean, we are talking about CDP. You can have data lake. You can have, data cloud. There are pros and cons on every solution, but again, I mean, we are repeating this message often. Well, don't wait for the data to be organized and perfectly organized to take action. Stop saying that, yeah, we need to fix that, and when it will be organized, we'll start. And that won't be done ever. That will always get more information. You'll always have new system, new way of collecting data, new proof point, data points that will get into your data set in the picture that describe your consumer. So if you are just waiting for everything to be in order and sort correctly to action it, that's what happens. So you are waiting for something that won't come. And I mean, coming back on CDP, data lake, data cloud, the data cloud, we do prefer a data cloud vision in a way that it's more flexible. It allow you to plug in most of the case plug and play best of breed solution on top of your data. And why we think that it's a better approach, that's because you can plug and unplug solution. the market is changing, the practices are changing. If you, jump into a project to organize your data to have a CDP, and you make the wrong bet and you don't have the data or the partner, the vendor that is the one that will drive innovation or bring more features or follow the trends and really shake the market with really making progress, bringing things to make progress, you're stuck because that's long project. That's a long thing to do. I mean, that's long IT projects to set up, and you won't leave soon. So because of this cost of implementation. So if you make the wrong choice, that can be tricky. That's why we are saying that, data cloud approach are more flexible, and by definition, because it's flexible, that gives you more opportunity to change, to adapt in the future. And we all know that we need to be able to change and adapt the way we work and we do marketing.
Yeah, everything changes so rapidly. I think, one thing to think about as well, too, is I know that, we hear a lot of marketers really focused, and I'm by no means saying that you shouldn't use a CDP or that there's one solution for everybody. But to your point, Ben, I think there's pros and cons to each. The CDP is not the only route to go. But I think a lot of marketers think whether it's a CDP or data lake or something internally that they built, that once they get there, once that structure is in place, then they're good to go. Then they'll be able to deliver relevant, personalized experiences for each individual customer because they'll have their identity solution in place. Maybe the CDP has, segmentation that it can construct on its own. You'll have powerful analytics, and that's all really great. But you're still going to be in a situation where you're going to be stuck with whatever the limitations of the CDP are in terms of segmentation or your ESP potentially. So there's still what we're seeing is going back to what we've talked about a million times, personalization ends up being either hyper-personalized experiences for a very small portion of your audience or broad-based segments for the rest. And so ultimately, even your goal of getting that your data in place doesn't necessarily mean it's going to achieve your marketing goals. So no. That's where we talk a lot about the layer of activation. There's we did an episode on that maybe a few months ago now, where we actually talk about that third layer, data activation, what exists in between.
Yeah, we mentioned that as the intelligence layer. That's part of your stack, and that can be, represented in lots of different ways or tool or solution. We just talk about being flexible and being able to have a stack that is best of breed. That's true for the data, and that's true for the activation, the intelligence layer. Intelligence layer and activation layer. The ESP, most of the ESP on the market are old. In terms of marketing timeline, they were built 10, 12 years, 15 years ago. For sure, they evolved. They sometimes acquire additional tool to plug that as an option, a module on top of what exists. But most of the market is pretty old in terms of practice on the ESP. And the innovation brought in the ESP is not, in the ESP market, in my opinion, is not enough to really change and challenge and serve what marketer wants to do. The personalization message, the right message to the right customer with the right channel at the right time. Holy grail for every marketer, but how do you actually deliver that? And sometimes, you are missing a piece that is the intelligence layer or pieces that build your intelligence layer with different tools.
Yeah, I think that just highlights that there's a gap between the two, data and activation, that most marketers, I don't think even really realize is there, or something that maybe they know it's there, but they don't realize it's solvable. Because to your point, if you think about the third layer of intelligence, even if your CDP, let's say you're your data, you get an A+ in terms of where it's structured. You have a CDP in place. You have great identity solution. You're getting analytics. It's being updated periodically, et cetera. It's still, CDPs haven't invested development money into creating that intelligence piece. So again, kind of going back to what I was saying earlier, a lot of the, what you can get from a segmentation perspective in a CDP is still pretty limited. And it's not really a relevant personalized experience for everybody. So by investing in the best of breed companies that we kind of referenced when we were talking about clouds, there are capabilities out there that sit in between that can ingest data either from your CDP or from a data lake, or kind of going back to what you were saying, even if your data is unstructured, the right intelligence layer should be flexible enough because we're not storing or warehousing any data. It's basically ingestion for analytics purposes. So wherever your data is coming in, it's very flexible. And then the output, again, should just be analytics that can help you build audiences, target those audiences, and then deliver them across whatever activation platform you're using at the moment.
Yeah, and I'm hearing you screaming that, oh yeah, but my tool has a data propensity model to prevent churn or to predict this behavior or to do X, Y, Z. Yes, but that's something that is made by the ESP. I'm not saying that it's not working, but that's different jobs. The same way that your intelligence layer solution can also send message. Sending an email, I mean, I can start and build a server to send an email tomorrow. That doesn't mean that I will be able to send 1 million email every month, deliver that inbox, and that's the job. That's their job. That's what they do correctly. And they've built that for years. That's the same way for the intelligence and before the activation. I mean, the intelligence and activation and before sending actually the message. You can see some check the box feature of buzzy word on whatever you want in data science, modeling, AI, and all of that on a lot of platforms. That's different job. That you don't give your data and your CDP work. I mean, you don't hire your ESP as a CDP. That's not what you are doing right now if you have a CDP project. So why the intelligence in between should be owned by one or the other? There are structure and things that companies are specialized in. And that's the way, using and stacking all of that together, making it work, require work, but that's the best way to get results.
Yeah, and it makes total sense. And I think we won't get into it today because we've talked about it a lot in the past, but that's the reason why I won't name them, but some of the giant marketing platforms that exist today have run into some trouble is because it's essentially... they're trying to do everything, but yeah. There are best of breed companies out there. There are really great CDPs. There are really great ESPs. And then companies that can provide that layer of intelligence in the middle really effectively that have been developing that capability. So I agree 100%. And hopefully what we'll end up with is an ecosystem in the future where marketers have, this is the dream, the ability to be able to select the pieces that they want without having to fully commit to a single platform. But we'll see.
Exactly.
What happens.
Great. That's the end of this episode today. That was episode 30. Again, that's just crazy. Really happy to chat as every week. Matt, see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody.